We're so glad that you joined us today for this podcast from Bishop Quentin Moore and the Father's House in Hutchinson, Kansas. God loves you and wants the best for you, and we want to hear what God is doing in your life. Share your story with us by sending an email to mystory@fathershouse.net. If you would like to support this ministry financially, you can do so at fathershouse.net/give. Just select the option that works for you. Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed today's message.
You got a Bible? Go to Bible, go to John chapter 21. I'm endeavoring, I didn't really realize it until it seemed like I figure out what kind of series I'm doing as I get into the series. Last week I talked about how Rufus, if you don't know who Rufus is, you can get online. I want us to talk these couple of weeks leading up to Easter about what it means to look at the cross, to look towards the cross, to understand what the cross means in our life. The cross has nearly lost its effect, particularly on Christians, because we know the story, right? It's kind of like Easter. We're tired of looking at the manger, and so the manger doesn't trick for us. And the cross, so many times we get so familiar with it and so familiar with Easter that we don't understand. But the cross is that ever-present symbol that continues to challenge the character of people. So many people look at the cross and they only see God paying a penalty. They don't look at the cross and see the revelation of his character. The cross really reveals the character of God. You begin to know the nature of God by looking at the cross. Of course, the blood of Christ covers sin. Of course, it's a crucifixion and it pays the payment. Of course, it does the penalty. And everybody wants to just see the judicial slamming of the gavel, you're free. That's true, but the character of God, the image in which you were made in. You were made in the image of God. So God's character is what shaped you. And we're supposed to be, you do understand that you'll be shaped by whatever characters you run with. Okay? Bad company corrupts good character. So whatever character you hang with will shape your character. That's why we try to help our children be careful about who they choose as friends, right? It's the cross that reveals the character of God. And if you're not careful, you miss his character because you're so overwhelmed with the fact that his penalty paid the price for your sin. And so I'm trying to endeavor to get you to see Easter is really not a time to be very motivational. I don't know whether you figured that out yet. It's hard to motivate people to go die. John 21, verse 1. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. In this way, he showed himself. So with me, showed. So the point is, he's going to show himself. Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and the two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, I'm going fishing. And they said to him, we're going with you. And they went out and immediately got into the boat. Say, in the boat, in the boat. And that night they caught nothing. Say again, nothing. They ain't very good at this. But when the morning had now come, Jesus stood on the shore. Yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Then Jesus said to them, children, have you any food? And they said, no. And he said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. And so they cast, and now they were not able to draw it in because of the multitude of fish. Therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, if you're John and you're writing this, is that a gig? I'm just asking, if you're John and you're writing this, therefore that disciple whom Jesus loved, I mean, that's a gig, right? Said to Peter, it is the Lord. And now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put off his outer garment, for he had removed it, plunged into the sea. But the other disciples came in a little boat, for they were not far from land, about 200 cubits, dragging the net of fish. Then as soon as they had come to land, they saw the fire of coals there and the fish laid on it and bread. And Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish with you that you have just caught. Simon Peter went up and dragged the net to land full of large fish, 153. And although there were so many, the net was not broken. Say, not broken. Not broken. Jesus said to them, come and eat breakfast. Yet none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you, knowing that it was the Lord. Jesus then came, took the bread, gave it to them, and likewise the fish. This is now the third time. Say, third time. Jesus showed himself to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? And he said, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said, feed my sheep. Lord, I pray that our eyes would be open to see what Jesus is showing. And that in that showing, Lord, we would be forever changed. In Christ's name. The title of the sermon is Third Time's a Charm. This is the third time that Jesus has gone to the shore. This is the third time Jesus has visited Peter while Peter was in a boat. This is the third time that in the boat, Peter called out, or Christ called out to Peter. The first time was that original moment, and I like Luke's rendition of it better than I do Mark's. Luke says, but Simon answered and said to him, Master, we've toiled all night and caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, I will let down the net. And when they had let it down, they caught a great number of fish, and their net was breaking. That first time when Jesus came along the shore, and here were these fishermen, and they had been overlooked by the other rabbis, and he goes to them, and they haven't caught anything, they're not any good at it, and he calls to them, and in a moment, and depending whether you read Mark or Luke, you realize that they leave everything and follow the Lord, right? They don't really know who it is, but they had been forgotten by the other rabbis, and now here they are, 17 years old, and this rabbi comes by and says, hey, I'll choose you, I'll take you. Nobody else wanted you, you loser, but I'll take you. Remember, I've preached on the dust of the rabbi. And so this first visit to the boat, Jesus comes and calls Peter out of the boat. Say out of, say get out of the boat. Get out of whatever it is you've been depending on. Get out of that, and their net was breaking, and he said, it's not going to break, but get out of the boat. If you follow me, I will make of you fishers of men. If you follow, I will make. Whatever, whomever you follow, that's what you'll become. That was last week's sermon. Whomever you follow, you're going to become like that. Whatever you follow, you keep following that, and you're going to be as cynical as that. You keep following that, you're going to be as thieving as that. You keep following that, you're going to be as bad as that. Whatever you follow, whoever you hang with, that's what you're going to become. He said, if you follow me, I will make you. There's no such thing as a self-made man. There's no such thing. None of you have ever made yourself. You've been made by God. That's the creation story. That's why science has got such a step up, is because everybody in America thinks they've made themselves. You didn't make yourself. God made you. If you believe in the creation story, you need to quit trying to take credit for what you think you made. You didn't make you. You've been made by another. And he said, if you follow me, I'll remake you. If you follow me, I'll remake you. We have this idea that if we follow him, we get to go to heaven. Yes, you get to go to heaven. But the real thing is that he's remaking you. It's this process of being remade. He said, you follow me and I'll remake you and you'll become fishers of men. And then the second time is in Matthew's gospel, the 14th chapter. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. And he said, come. And Peter was come down out of the ship and he walked on the water. The second time that Jesus comes to the boat, they're in the middle of the sea. Say, in the middle. In the middle of the sea, in the middle of the night, say middle of the night, and in the middle of a storm. You ever been in the middle of something? I mean, I'm serious. You ever been in the middle of a mess? I mean, in the middle of the night, in the middle of the storm, in the middle of the sea, and Jesus comes to where you're at. In the middle of whatever it is you're in. I get so tickled with people that they want to talk about grace, how great grace is, and grace is great, right? I mean, grace will save you and you'll begin a journey. I mean, grace is wonderful, but how many know that it takes more grace in the middle than it does to start? It takes more grace in the middle of a mess than it did to even start the thing. Everybody wants to celebrate about the day they found Jesus. How about the day he found you in the middle of a mess after he saved you? How about the day he came to you the second time and now you were really in trouble and the boat was about to go down? Forget the net. Now the boat's in trouble. Am I making sense? In the middle of the storm, in the middle of the night, in the middle of the mess, there is grace in the gaps. There's grace in the gaps. I'm a Rocky fan. Anybody here a Rocky fan? I'm a Rocky fan. You remember Rocky and Polly, and Polly and Rocky is going to marry Polly's sister, and Polly goes, why do you want to marry my sister? And Rocky said, because she's got gaps. And I got gaps. And we fill each other's gaps. I'm going to tell you something. I do a lot of weddings. I'm pretty good at weddings. But you can start a wedding, but I got news for you. Marriage is made in the middle. Marriage is made out here in the middle of the storm, in the middle of the night, in the middle of the... Jesus comes to us in the middle and asks us if we'll hear his word. In fact, if you read the scriptures in Matthew 14, it says he would have passed by. He would have walked on by. See, it takes more grace in the middle. The thief, it's interesting. The thief got to go to paradise that day. Grace, paradise, right? I got grace and had to go in a process. It takes more grace to go through the process than it does to go to paradise. Most of you want that grace to go. There's some people that got the grace to jump. They want to be raptured. Hey, you need grace to be processed. Grace to be transformed. The story of Jesus coming to him and calling him out of the boat and then coming to him the second time in the middle of the process and again giving him a word that he can step out of. But this time, this is a little different. This is the third time. Say, third time's a charm. This is his calling, and now all of a sudden here he is, and it's after the cross, and it's after the resurrection, and the Lord's been in the upper room, and all that's taken place, and Peter just goes, I'm going fishing. I'm going back to my boat. This is so confusing. I've been doing this for 3.5 years, and I got PTSD. This thing has really, I've been traumatized. The cross is a traumatizing experience. Zeke's looking at me now going, Papa, I don't want to come see Jesus on the cross. It's traumatizing. I can remember the first year we did the play. We made sure it was traumatizing. We had so much blood over Ron, my Lord. It's trauma. The cross is supposed to be a traumatizing experience. The cross is supposed to bring you in question of everything you've ever believed. The cross is supposed to challenge you and what you think. It's supposed to challenge the world in which you live. It's going to make you experience all these emotions. In fact, trauma can bring you to the place that you're on the brink of being unraveled. Trauma is what pushes you to the limit of your personality, and there's nothing left. Unless you lose your life, you'll not find it. And the cross will take you right there to where you can't handle what's happening. And and Peter's going, listen, I'm emotionally distraught. I'm depressed. I can't get over this. This is too much to process. Have you ever had a trauma in your life that was? I think the world is filled. I just want everybody on the news to shut up. I'm telling you, it's traumatizing. Turn on the news. I'd rather watch football. Basketball, it's traumatizing. I want to tell some people, you're scaring the children. Come on, you're scaring the people, traumatized. But those traumas of our life, those troubles and trials that come, if they are not processed, you'll transmit them to the next generation. If you don't, it's impossible to live without trauma. It's impossible to live it. And that trauma must be translated. I need someone to translate this trauma that has happened to me so that I understand why it's happening. And let me tell you, the church's job is not to motivate. The church's job is to translate the trauma that you're going through into a way that you can understand what God's doing. And the cross needs to be translated. And Peter can't get the translation. And see, again, if you don't translate the trauma, you'll transmit it to the people that you love. But if you can translate the trauma, it'll transform you. And you'll become a person that you didn't know existed. Peter is traumatized. And he's trying to find something to stabilize his job. And he just says, his life. And he says, I think I'll just go back. I think I'll just reach back to something I understand. I'll just go get my old job. I'll go back to the old boat. I'll just revert to that thing. See, there's something that drives us, right, to go back to what we used to trust in, to go back to that lean not to thine own understanding, but just go back. Listen, going back's not a sin. Fishing's not a sin. But that going back, see, a crucifixion can drive you back to the, I'll just go back to what I can control. Am I doing okay? I'll just go back to where I think I'm in charge, where I'll just go back to that place where I think I can handle it. And the truth of the matter is you can't handle it. But those things inside of me that have you got, I don't know about you, but I got those things that just make me want to go back. I got those things in my life that just are unresolved, those things about myself that I can't figure out, those bitter wounds that have been handed to me. And you know, when the moon lines up with Jupiter, then Hyde turns into Jekyll. You know, I mean, I don't know. You ever just flip out? I mean, you're going along fine, and then someone doesn't smile at you, and you just flip out, and your whole world. They don't return your phone call, and now you're depressed. They don't like you on Facebook, or they unlike you on Facebook, and now all of a sudden your life is worthless, and you can't figure out why. And it's because there's these issues in your life that you've never really handled. Don't shout me down when I'm doing good. See, people that have problems and have never translated those traumas, transmit them to their children. Now Cindy's trying to deal with them in school because we don't know how to resolve the issues that have traumatized us in our life. And Peter's confused. He hasn't got it together. And even Superman has kryptonite. I mean, right? Even the kryptonite still hurts. And he's going through this process, and it's like, why didn't you pick a rabbi? Why? You should have left me at the boat and went and got somebody that graduated from Jerusalem University, because I'm not up to this, right? I ain't got enough. You said you were going to make me to be a fisherman of men, and I can't do this. I've got issues. I just got to go back. I wouldn't have picked Peter to begin with, frankly. Peter was a loud mouth, bravado. He's that guy. He's Bobby Knight. I don't like Bobby Knight. I want you to be Bill Self. I mean, I'm, you know, you'll get it in a minute. It's basketball time. Catch up. I mean, he's always running his mouth off, cussing and cutting people's ears off. I mean, he's an embarrassing cousin that you wished would leave. Flipping out, showing off, and yet he's the dude that goes, "Thou art the Christ." Don't you just hate it when they get something right? The guy's in the room and you just want him to shut up, and then all of a sudden he unlocks the Rubik's Cube and you want to go, "Oh, of course he knows. Of course he," right? The guy that knows everything knows something, and now you're going, "Why didn't I see that? Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." And if that wasn't bad enough, then Jesus goes, "Upon you, I'll build my church." And now you're going, "You gotta be kidding. He's gonna lead us?" I mean, you do know this is Judas's last straw. When Jesus picks Peter, Judas is done. Oh, well, I don't have time. "Thou art the Christ." Oh, that's so good, Peter. I'm gonna change your name from Shifty to Solid, and I'm going to build my church on you, and hell's not going to prevail, and I'll give you the keys to the Cadillac, and you can lock and unlock, and wow, you're the man. And he acts like it, right? Oh, cut off the ear. The soldier is here. Makes me angry every time I think about it. Same chapter. "And from that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and be raised on the third day." It's not like Jesus hid this from them. It's not like he didn't tell them. Have you ever told somebody something over and over again, and then when it happened, they went, "I love it. I love it when people stop me in the foyer and they go, 'We didn't know.'" And I said, "Oh, you didn't read the bulletin? You didn't listen to the thing on the screen? And you didn't listen to me when I talked?" "Yeah, but I didn't know. We sent you 2 emails and text message and had Kara call you." "Yeah, but I didn't know." You know how many people it is, "Thou art the Christ," but they don't know what the Christ is going to do. "You're Jesus," but they don't understand why Jesus is in their life. "You've accepted the Lord, but you don't know what that means. Thou art the Christ." And Jesus immediately began to tell them, "I'm going to suffer. there's going to be this thing that goes on, and I'm going to be killed, and on the third day I'm going to... And if you keep reading in Matthew 16, Peter takes the Lord aside and says, "What are you thinking?" And begins to rebuke him. It's pretty strong language. "Peter, you've chose me. I'm your Secretary of State. Now listen to me. Come on. Stay here. Get here. I know you're the Lord, but I'm your Secretary of State. You need to listen to me. That's a dumb idea. Are you getting it yet? I just want to know, am I connecting?" And the Lord says, "Thou art not mindful." You're not mindful. You do know there's a difference between being mindful and thinking. There's a difference. You can have all the thoughts you want, still not be mindful of anything. Whatever your mind is full of, generally your thoughts will bounce off of. Oh, I wished I had time to unpack that. I can give people a thought, but if their mind is full of negativity, that thought will never penetrate because they're full of themselves. They're full of their own scenarios. They're full of their own opinions, so they can't get a fresh thought. "Thou art not mindful of the things of God. Get behind me, Satan." Isn't this interesting? A moment ago, he's the dude. Now he's telling him, get... That's Peter. This is all Peter's journey. Peter's the strong, got this thing together, not the cross. That can't be. See, the cross is that traumatic, that earth-shaking, that thing that challenges your bravado, that thing that challenges everything you think you know, that thing that looks at you and says, "You have not got this together." Peter was no match for a Roman soldier. He couldn't even fish. He was lousy at it. But he thinks he's going to pull a sword and he's going to take the ear. What an idiot. And just a moment ago, the Lord had said to him in Luke's gospel, he'd said, "Listen, Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift you, to filter you, to check you out, to look under the sheets. But I've prayed for you that your faith would not fail. And when you're converted, changed, go back to your brethren and give them a fresh start," the Message Bible says. When? Say when. Not if. I want you to know, when the Lord says the enemy is after you, it will end. And you will win. And it doesn't matter whatever the enemy's trying to sift you through, you will win because God has said, when you say when, not if. Peter missed that pronoun. He missed it. But it's interesting to me how the Lord cautions us and says, you're going to go through a process. You're going to go through a process, Peter. I've chosen you. I've saved you. I've called you out of the boat. I've met you in the middle of storms. But son, I'm going to take you through a process. And that process is going to challenge what you've been mindful of. That process is going to challenge what you think you know. And that process is called the cross. And listen to me, every one of you, I love you dearly, but until you have gone through the traumatic reality of the cross, I don't care what you repeated after me down here. I don't care what you think in your head. My grandma used to always say, son, don't ever trust a man without a limp. God will take Jacob down, he'll wrestle with him, and then he'll put his hip out of place. There's some place that you know that you've come to the end of you and that your strength and your bravado and what you think will not get you through. There will be a place where you come to the point of death and you realize you're at the end. You will have a trauma. Listen, I've lived through one in the last 6 months. I don't know. That thing brought me to the end of myself again. It's interesting how some people think they're just going to go through one. I've been through several of them in my life. Maybe you're just born under a lucky star. God will bring you through and down into this cross, and it will rock your world. Simon, the devil is after you. Listen to me. The devil wants to dominate your thinking. He wants to control your feelings. He wants to manipulate you. He wants to separate you from the Lord. But I have prayed for you that your faith, say faith, 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 faith. It's all about your faith, Peter. Fight the good fight is what Paul would say. You're going to have to fight to hold on to your faith. Listen to me. There will be things happen in our lives that will rock our world so much that we'll nearly give up on the faith and go back to fishing. Now that's what's happening. Get serious. The enemy doesn't want to play with you. He wants to destroy you. This isn't, let me see what I can get away with. When this is all over, and Peter just keeps going back to the boat, Linus has his blanket, right? Abraham's got Lot. Moses had Aaron. What is it that we just go, that, you know what I'm talking about, that little wound, that little place where she said, he said, that little, yeah, but you don't understand, that little where you feel sorry for yourself, or I'm too old, too tired, too skinny, too, that, you know what I'm talking about, that little thing that you kind of go back to and curl up around and console yourself with another glass of wine. You know what I'm... Or a bonbon. Whatever. You know what it is. And you go back to it. Peter had trouble. He followed at a distance. He went into the courtyard. He saw them convict and beat. Where's the 5,000? He heard the nails. He ran to hide the rumors of the resurrection. He ran to the tomb. He stood in the upper room. He saw the Lord. But those things, that little stuff that kept rolling around in his head, this isn't making any sense. He went to the cross. That pain, what is going on? I need it to stop. See, bitterness is the reaction of one who expects something from another without daring to look at himself. Bitterness is the reaction of someone who expects something from somebody else without daring to look into his own heart, and thus he becomes disappointed. As disappointed as Peter is with himself, can I tell you he's disappointed with Jesus? Have you ever been disappointed with the Lord because Porter died? Have you ever been disappointed with Jesus because that prayer didn't seem to be answered? Yeah, I mean, come on. Now let's get real. Can I just get real with you this morning? Quit playing about Easter and understand that Easter is not just this picture where the blood is spread and I get to go to heaven. No, Easter is about confronting my brain and me getting honest with the Lord that I'm a little irritated with you. I'm going to go back to fishing. I'm going to just let go of this faith thing. They're sitting at home. You're sitting at home because they're just a little ticked that someone hurt their feelings at the church. Because they don't necessarily like the style of music, or am I making any sense yet? So they just sit at home. No, I don't have to go to church. I'm sorry, you have to get in the ark. I'm sorry, it is about community. This isn't an individual journey. There's no plane that'll take you to, not really. There's not a one-seated airplane that, most of them have a few hundred other people on the plane. Just saying. But this bitterness, and I think that cynical, negative, that disappointment, that trauma, that yeast of the Pharisee shows up. You know, the Pharisee has this idea that if this, then that. That yeast that Jesus cautions us about, that yeast of the Pharisees that says, well, I've been good, I should get this. That's the yeast. It's leaven. It'll make the whole batch rise. If you hang on to this, this is all about a performance. And if we perform real well, surely Jesus would beat the Romans and we would be in charge. Am I making sense? That's the yeast. That's the thinking. It's still in the church today. If I don't smoke and drink and run with the folk that do, he just goes back to the boat. Caught nothing. But it's a setup. It's really a setup. It's not working, but I'm back at the boat and I'm doing everything I know to do. It's not working, but he's lost in his own thoughts. It's not working. Say third time is a charm. This trying to make. See, the cross always confronts the illusions that we have of ourselves. Peter's determination to fight to protect the Lord as he swings the sword and cuts off the ear is in direct conflict with the will of God. And God picks up the ear. He who lives by the sword will die by the sword. My way, is not to return violence with violence. I'm not going to stand up against evil. I'm going to surrender to evil. See, the cross is the revelation that God is not going to fight to protect himself, but that love gives its life. That you never overcome evil with a stronger evil. You always overcome evil with a greater good. And at the cross, you see the bravado of what we think a strong man is, and he is embarrassed by a God who refuses to protect himself. Now, I know you don't want to hear this, because we're going to fight for our... This is the dilemma Peter is in. He cannot resolve a Christ who won't fight to protect himself. Can't resolve it. I'm strong. I'm the guy. And he who is to lead is now following at a distance. He who said, I'll never deny, is now denying the one that's embarrassed him, that let him down, that didn't save Porter, that didn't... Am I? After Easter, I'll motivate you. Right now, I'm trying to confront you. Right now, I'm trying to confront a mindset in humanity that has to change. It had to change in Peter, and it has to change in us. It's traumatic. It's debilitating. It's disappointing. It's... See, the cross reveals a mercy, a love that suffers long and is kind. A love that gives its life. And you see, the cross will unmask our illusions of what it means to be strong. That you do understand that the cross reveals human nature. And it also reveals the nature of God. And it's at the cross that we have a decision to make. His way? Hey, you boys got any food? He's standing back on the shore, Ron, looking back at a boat. Hey, did you catch anything? All of a sudden, the Alpha is the Omega and the beginning is the end, and we're standing on the shore again and going, hey, did you catch anything? Is it working? How's that going for you? Hey. He's back in the boat going, hey, Peter's so caught up in his own thoughts that he doesn't even recognize him. John, the one that Jesus loved. Can you feel the dig? I mean, come on. I bet they're sitting on the shore after Jesus has flown away, and John's going, I knew who he was. It's the Lord. The man that left everything to follow an unknown rabbi to a place he didn't know. The man who stepped out of the boat on a word from that man and walked on the water. That man, Peter, plunges into the water, swims to the shore, and begins to follow the Lord. And this time, he knew he was headed for a cross of his own, and he would be crucified upside down. The first time, he thought he was following a man to overthrow Rome. This time, he knew he was following a man to the death of himself. And his friend Paul would say, it's no longer I that lives. I was crucified with Christ. This is the cross. My friends, with all of my heart, I've been ministering for years and years and years. This is the cross. It confronts those ideas inside of us that are not God. It confronts them. It disturbs them. It unnerves them. And the next time we get out of the boat, we won't get out of the boat with rose-colored glasses. The next time we get out of the boat, we won't do it so we can prove we can walk on water. The next time we get out of the boat, it'll be just to follow him to our own cross. The cross before, the cross behind. Come on, it's nothing but the cross. It's at the cross where I first saw the light. It's right there. What is it that God's working on you? Yeah. You might not be able to associate with Peter, but I promise you, God's working on us.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from the Father's House. We hope you stay connected by following us online at fathershouse.net. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using @TFH Hutch.